Welcome back to the podcast, everyone. I'm here with Ray Waddingham and Jeff Brennan. Now, you guys both had some involvement in the Mental Health Act review. Ray, you are talking later on today about an alternative Mental Health Act review. So starting with you, give us your kind of feeling about being here at this meeting today and some experience.
So far, there's just been so many different perspectives and things sort of shot out into the air, and it's really dizzying to try and sort of make sense of them. But I keep kind of having all these yeah buts, there's these things that we're not talking about, so it's intensely frustrating, but I'm hoping we'll get to it.
Good. And Jeff, you've done lots of work with Star Wars.
Yeah.
Lots of experience of how to improve the care given to people in inpatient settings and in people who are sectioned, etc.
Very nice of you to say so.
Give us your perspective on this work so far.
Well, it's huge, actually. And, I think a bit like Ray, it's mind-swilling. The presentations have been excellent, I have to say, because I think for me they've focused on some core messages like how we're getting wrong in our assumptions about BAME admissions, the bed base isn't it all, the international stuff I thought was fascinating. So a bit like Ray though, it's almost like I need a weekend to think now to come up with. And for me, what's crucial is how do we take this fantastic stuff and make it sensible to patients and staff. For me, you know, my focus is inpatient care, so how do we take this and make it sensible and usable for them, say, right, this is what's useful for us in our mission to make things better on the wards, really. So yeah.
And what you're going to say in your talk, Ray, later on, what can we do given the constraints of the current system to improve experiences?
It's tricky because what I'm going to say in my talk is probably really radical, so I might save that for later, which is actually just rethinking the whole way in which we understand mental distress, compulsory admission, and the supportive structure outside of hospitals. I think we need to start again, and the stuff we've got now has been passed by our forefathers, a group of white men from a long time ago, and I think we need to do things differently. But with the system we've got at the moment, we've got, I believe, a duty to improve inpatient care. Because if you're going to put people there, we've got to make it as good as possible. I think, for me, there's something about reducing the length of detention. So people are only there during the extreme crisis. I know I was sectioned for a month and then almost 6 months. And that was way longer than me trying to escape. I tried to escape during one thing, and then that led to many sort of sectionings after for the medication to work and things. And it wasn't about risk of harm to self or other, it was actually just they told my dad it was about paperwork saving. So just really thinking about how long we'd be keeping people there. And then I don't know if you heard of the drug-free wards in Norway in Tromsø. I'm wondering about, okay, so we're detaining people, but what about right to choose medication or not medication? Can we have environments where people are really trying to work more creatively with extreme distress, as they are in Norway? Whereas here, there's an assumption that once you're detained, there will be medication if you have a diagnosis of schizophrenia. Can we not open that up a bit?
It was interesting that Norway was one of the countries where the detention rates were going down. Mm. Although we're not making the causal connection, but it was interesting when they said Norway and Finland, because they're trying to radicalise their mental health systems. You don't know if it's having an effect, but it's a question.
Definitely.
I think you said something about we have to improve inpatient care, and I couldn't agree more. You know, I think it is interesting because, you know, although it's been very good, and it is very good, this is a very good project and these people are doing very good work, it is still within the paradigm of risk, detention. And you know, when you go to wards, one of the soul-destroying things you hear somebody say is, this is like a prison. And it's not just that they're detained, it's actually the double airlock, the doors locked, the whole culture in which we've now generated wards. And we're very clear, we don't blame the people on the wards. We think that culturally we've created these environments. And our message is we need to back out from that and start creating different ones. And we have examples. I gave earlier on Navigo, which is a place in Grimsby, and their whole ethos for their hospital. We want the wards to feel like a high-class hotel. And that's a great kind of starting position to create good wards. And I would say we have to create wards for the voluntary patient, and include the detained patient rather than what we've got is they're actually wards for detained patients and the voluntary patients have to kind of fit in as best they can, which was a message from the service user group to this as well. And I would agree with that. And we need to join together. You know, we all need to get together, take more risks, but also, you know, say to people in society, you know, we need to take more, you know, we are treating people decently and we need you to help us to take those risks, to become involved. We need wards to be much more open spaces, internet access, mobile phones, digital, families, you know, access. They aren't separate to the community. They never were separate to the community. And that's the biggest mindset thing we've got to shift away from. Just because there's a door locked in a hospital, it's still part of our communities. These are still vibrant places full of our people and we need to look after them better. That's definitely true.
I think even beyond sort of designing hospitals for voluntary patients, I'd want to design hospitals that I myself would feel okay just to be in. But also there's something about training staff and resourcing staff. I train nurses and I've been really shocked that they don't get any support in how to be with someone in a crisis.
Yeah.
There's a lot of technological stuff in terms of restraint, although they don't call it that anymore, and use of medication.
Restrictive practices.
Yeah, great crazy-making sort of framing of language there. But if we support the staff to be more open to people and to actually understand a rights-based approach that we are taking away people's liberty, and skill them up in de-escalation and sort of dialogical practice. Not open dialogue, but the way of actually being with someone. I think we'd see big changes, because I worry very much about the use of coercion in wards that isn't just used in sort of intense situations. It's if someone doesn't want to take medication or someone's feeling very angry. And I think most of those things could be stopped.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, we've got wards that are able to function without doing those things. You know, we have examples out there of places where people, I mean, you mentioned Norway, we've also got places in the UK, Star Wards and Safe Wards have helped some of those wards, but it's, you know, we didn't do it, they did it. And we need to kind of find those places and say, and I think you're right, they're focused on trauma, not illness, they're focused on engagement, they're focused on humanisation. Staff are accessible, they don't see patients as a bundle of risks that need to be managed. They see them as people who have needs that need to be helped. And all those psychological shifts do need to happen. And I guess my concern, I think we share the same concern, is this is a very worthy thing, but it's still based around legal detention in hospital. And we need to inject a little bit of that's not the only story. And that's not the only view, the filter to look through. But I think some of the presentations were kind of challenging that a bit as well, I hope.